You are listening to Press Pass, brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of GNAT TV's Press Pass series. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director at GNAT TV's news project, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Tuesday, December 7th. We're also pleased to be joined by two special guests today. Ben Heintz is the editor for student journalism at the Underground Workshop, which is a new platform launched last year by VT Digger for student journalists. The intent there is to give more young Vermonters access to the experiences of reporting and publication and bring their voices into the public sphere. Ben, great to have you with us today. Thank you very much for making the time for this conversation.
Thank you. I actually have a five-year-old I have to manage for 1 second.
Oh, go right ahead.
I'll be right back.
I totally understand. And while Ben is off taking care of that, my pleasure to introduce Addie Lentzner, who is a senior at Arlington Memorial High School, who recently had one of her stories published in VT Digger as part of their Underground Workshop project. She wrote a story about the experience of homeless people who have found shelter at area motels, and at one in particular located just south of Bennington, the Fife and Drum Motel. And we'll be hearing more about that in just a moment. But first, Ben, just to get us started, tell us a little bit about the Underground Workshop and how it came to be. What's involved with it?
Yeah, so I'm a high school teacher by training. I've worked for 20 years at U32 High School, teaching history and English and journalism. And the Underground Workshop was an idea I had about 4 years ago, basically with the thought that high school journalists often have ambitious stories and write really powerful pieces that rarely reach the audience that they deserve. And so one thought behind the Underground Workshop was, how do I get student journalism out in the world where more people see it and it has the impact that it should have more often. And then the other idea, which I think is really what makes the Underground Workshop run, is the idea of connecting students with each other across schools to collaborate and to work together on student journalism. And so it's a collaborative group that brings student journalists together from across Vermont. And the origins were basically, I went to VT Digger with the idea. Ann Galloway, who's VT Digger's founder and editor, is a visionary in my mind and heard me and was supportive for the idea from the start. And then the other key piece is that I'm a Roland Fellow. So I applied with the Roland Foundation for a fellowship, which has given me time to get this off the ground. You know, where I'm teaching part-time for a couple of years. And then in the future, we're still figuring out exactly how it's all going to work, but VT Digger's committed to it for the long run, and we keep growing and thriving. So it's been a great success and really exciting. The last thing I'll say in terms of sort of how it works, it's actually a workshop. So every second Thursday, there's a meeting where students from around the state gather on Zoom. And usually there's a piece of student work at the center of the meeting. So last week, a student from Woodstock brought a piece to the workshop for feedback from the group. There were about 15 kids there. Also VT Digger reporters. And basically we talk about that project, the piece of writing. Student receives a lot of feedback. But also we work on big collaborative projects. We're getting geared up for a big project about basically the carbon footprints of our school buildings. It's going to be called a climate report card for our schools, et cetera. We have a lot of really cool things in the mix, but basically that's what it is. It's an actual workshop that meets every second week, gathering students from across the state to work together on pretty ambitious collaborative projects.
Wow, that's fascinating. I wish I had something like that when I was in high school. Well, Addie, how did you hear about the Underground Workshop? And I guess What gave you the idea to do a story about homeless people living in motels?
Yeah, so I think that I first heard about the underground workshop through actually another student group I'm a part of. Ben is, you know, really, really good at trying to get the word out and make this accessible to students around the state. So I heard about it and thought it was a really awesome opportunity. And then kind of saw it as a way to, or as a platform to share out the issue of homelessness in our state right now, which is a really big crisis that we kind of just averted as a state because the governor had been shutting down a program where Vermonters experiencing homelessness could get free motel rooms to stay in. And so there were hundreds of Vermonters who were now, you know, then on the streets because the governor was shutting this program down. And that was something that I felt was a really huge injustice. And I wanted to bring out the real lives of people who are living in these motels and what their experiences are and kind of humanize that story so that people understood what was going on and why this program was so important. And so that's kind of where the story came from. And then a few weeks ago, the governor did reinstate the program. So I kind of see this opportunity with Ben's workshop. It's not just something for students to, you know, have this really cool extracurricular opportunity. It's also a way for students to be involved in making change and advocacy. So, yeah.
So what drew you to the Fife and Drum as the place to base the story? I mean, there are several motels around the area where homeless folks are sheltering at the moment. Must have been something special about the Fife and Drum that attracted you there.
Yeah. So the manager who works there, Pammy, who was kind of the center of the story, I had a relationship with her already from going and visiting the motel through other work I was doing. And so I thought that, you know, the Fife and Drum would kind of be a perfect place where I was already kind of familiar with it to go and kind of do a deeper dive into people's stories.
So we want to definitely have you take us on that deeper dive in just a moment. But first, Ben, let me just go back to you for a quick second here. I was just wondering, how many articles do you typically review over the course of a month or two or in between a publishing cycle? And I guess, are there any particular types of stories in particular that you're looking for?
Well, it's an open to any possibility and any kind of submission setup right now. We don't get a flood of submissions from students. I think it's a hard time these couple of years in the schools. And generally, you know, our goal is to publish a story a week, and there's a long pipeline going back from any of those stories of drafts. So Addie can attest that, like, if you saw the number of hours that Addie put into that article, I think it's well beyond what students usually invest in an essay for school, you know, or the usual writing assignment. So it's a big process, and a lot of the stories that we are running come from series that we offer. So last year we did a collaborative series, an invitational series, I should say, about the Black Lives Matter flag in our schools. And we had a number of different teams of students come forward to write stories about the experience of their school with the Black Lives Matter flag. Each of those stories, I'm really proud of all of them, but each of them was a major undertaking for those students in terms of reporting, and then a lot of drafts, like I said. So the pieces that we publish, you know, there's a lot behind each one, and we're definitely in a quality, not quantity sort of philosophy. Once a week is the goal. We've had some times where we had two stories in a week, and occasionally we don't have a story for a given week, but we try to publish every Sunday. That's the big sort of scheduling goal. Yeah, I wanted this to tack on with Addie talking about the other group she's a part of, the Student Anti-Racism Committee. I just think one of the really exciting things going on in Vermont right now is the networking across the state between students. And it's not just journalism. Other kinds of activism and other projects are bringing students together. Zoom is actually kind of an important piece of that puzzle. And the pandemic, in a sort of silver linings way, maybe helped some people discover those connections when other things were shut down. But it's really cool. I have benefited from my connection with Addie, where like the last project we did was a kind of a risky thing. We put out the call for commentaries from around the state about our Black Lives Matter flag series. And we received a lot of really good commentaries. And one of the students in particular basically came out of the woodwork because of Addie and knowing Addie through the Student Anti-Racism Committee, and brought a really important perspective from Enosburg Falls, which is a school that's been in the news for some alleged racist incidents on the soccer field, as probably viewers have heard. And so having a voice from that school and having some perspectives from that community was really valuable in that project. And it was owing to the connection that I had with Addie from our project. So there's a lot of really cool things happening right now, breaking down, you know, the way it was when I was in high school, which is basically you went to your high school and that there was like a dome over it and you didn't know or really relate to anybody outside of that. I think young people right now have a lot of passion and a lot more skill than usually kids that I knew growing up had. And it's exciting to see them connect with each other and start to work on some of these big problems that we face and to have the tools to really join the conversation makes it extra exciting.
I bet. Well, Addie, back to you. I guess if you will, take us inside one of the motel rooms that you went to when you were doing your research for the story. I mean, what is it like for a day-to-day for a person living there who's homeless? You sort of profiled a couple of the people in your piece, and one of whom I thought was very interesting, a lady named Bonnie, who had a PhD in cognitive therapy and was once an entertainer who works with some fairly famous people. What is it like for those folks living there? I'm sure it must be a bit of a struggle for a lot of the time.
Yeah. I'm just going in there as a reporter. And so I will never know the experience of actually living there in the motel, but it's definitely, I think there are struggles and there are also benefits. I mean, Pammy really spread a feeling of family there for a lot of people. That's something that I heard from a couple different clients there who are staying, who are just saying that it's a supportive environment and they feel safe because of that family feeling. But at the same time, it's a motel room, and a motel room is not the best place to be living. You know, it's definitely not a long-term solution, but it's a really good band-aid solution for right now. And it's keeping a lot of people kind of stable for the time being until there's more permanent housing in Vermont. So when I talked to Bonnie, she was telling me all of those, you know, fantastic things about her life with working with Frank Sinatra as an entertainer and all of these grand things. And then, you know, she had an emergency in her life that pushed her into a place where she really needed help. And the fife and drum was that help that she got. And she had said that it saved her life. And so I think it really shows how this can happen to anybody, really. And to have something like the motel program in place is really a really necessary support system. So I think as for giving a view into one motel room, I think it's really complicated. But I think that one thing that I pulled out of this experience reporting there was just that, like, each person has an individual story and a lot of things going on in their life. But the fife and drum provided a sense of, like, grounding for a lot of people.
What is it about this whole issue of homeless folks that you think people should know more about that they largely don't at this point? Do many of the people who are living there, do they sort of get drawn into the sort of stereotypical view? Or do you think they just can't hold a job down or something like that, or they can't keep a house? But I'm sure that's a much more complicated picture. But what is there something that you think people who have never experienced that and never come close to being in that situation need to know?
Yeah, I think one thing that's really important to know is just to keep in mind that we're talking about families and individual people with stories and with lives, you know. And I think what you said, Andrew, is really true, that stereotype often comes into people's minds when thinking about the issue of homelessness. And, you know, I think a lot of those stereotypes were applied to the motel program too. A lot of people were saying, like, oh, look, there's so much crime at those motels. Look at all these issues. But in reality, like I said in the story, Pammy said that there were no calls to the police or no issues with crime at the motel whatsoever in the past year. So I think it's important for viewers to remember that it's really easy to latch on to stereotypes that are repeated so often in society, but it's really important to look past that and to just see the people behind that. And I think that's what I hope that this story and, you know, Ben's workshop in general can kind of help provide that perspective for people.
And just to bring us up to speed, what is the status of that homeless program at this point? I know it's been extended on through the rest of this year, but is it going forward in 2022 as well, or is it going to be ended in January?
Yeah, so it has been extended until March 1st, 2022 so far. And so that means that anyone who meets the income eligibility requirements can get a motel room as long as there's capacity.
Okay. Ben, back to you then. How do other students who may have a story that they want to tell or a subject they want to delve into, how do they sort of get in touch with you to kind of say, hey, I've got this idea. I'd like to write for VT Digger too. How do I do it?
Yeah, there's not one way that has happened. Addy mentioned, you know, we connected through the Student Anti-Racism Committee. Some kids have come forward because of their parent has seen something on VT Digger and said, hey, did you know about this? And the kid learns about it that way. Teachers occasionally have encouraged the student. And then a lot of our students have come forward just on their own. I'm not really sure in many cases what prompted them to be in touch, but basically every story that we publish, you know, I put an editor's note on there to email ben@vtdigger.org if you're interested to be involved. And that's where a lot of the contacts have come from. It's just people emailing me. And then, you know, the first thing is just sort of a conversation like this one. Addy and I have had many conversations on Zoom about not just this project, but another idea Addy had for a even more involved feature piece from a lot of other work she's done about a particular homeless man in Bennington. You know, there's just sort of an editor and writer discussion about what's your idea, what would it entail. A lot of times with students, you know, it's a question of helping them see the angles on the story that are important to make it feel comprehensive, and also what's realistic to accomplish and how much time, you know, young people don't have the experience to understand sometimes how much it's really going to take to pull something off. Addie's somebody who's for a senior in high school done a lot of activism and a lot of pretty involved work that took a lot of hours, and knows what it takes to pull something off. But sometimes it's a question of just helping kids understand the realistic version of a story that they're imagining. Yeah, that's it. They can just email me to be in touch. You know, the other thing kids have done is brought story ideas to the workshop I mentioned. So we have that twice a month workshop where a student can come and pitch an idea to the group. We've had a couple of really cool meetings when students brought reporting challenges or ideas about about stories they're tackling, and trying to get insights from the group about how they might do it. It hasn't ever been just one thing. It's a lot of different ways that these stories have come about. But basically, I'm the hub of all of it. And usually there's an email to me that's kind of the genesis of the story.
Interesting. Addie, back to you again for a second. I'm always been curious. How do you and your peers tend to get your news? Is it a lot of it come through like social media, or I hate to sound it 20th century newspapers, where do folks your age kind of, you know, acquire information about what's going on?
That's a good question. I think a lot of young people do use social media as the main source of news. But I also do know that there are a lot of people like myself and other people at my school who read the VT Digger or the New York Times, or read more typical newspapers to get information. But I think that this day and age, there is a lot of people who use social media. So I think that, you know, I don't know if maybe this was something Ben was going to be doing anyway, but like getting those stories up on Instagram or something, you know, that's where a lot of youth are at these days. So that could be helpful. But
and Ben, just to follow up on that, how do you see journalism, the industry, sort of changing or evolving as we go forward? I mean, my background is in the print side of this business. So television is something I came to only semi recently, and I watched as first it was websites were kind of what drained a lot of readers away from the good old print version I was comfortable with. You know, the industry just changed and evolved like so rapidly over a 5 or 10 year period. It was almost unrecognizable to me afterwards. But I guess I just wonder, you know, now we're in yet another phase of that evolution. What do you see coming next?
I don't feel super qualified to answer that. I'll give a couple of 2 cents, but you know, I think you're right. There was a huge transitional period where the model I grew up with, you know, growing up in Vermont, the Burlington Free Press, the Times Argus, those papers were sort of bread and butter for the community. They're still there, but they've definitely taken a hit through these last couple of decades with the internet, as you mentioned. I think that VT Digger's big insight, or Ann Galloway's big insight founding VT Digger, you know, when everything went on the internet, there was a lot of places that had like a paywall, et cetera. And what she realized is, okay, I need to make this kind of a go-to destination for people to just count on VT Digger for the news they need to know around the state. And make it free. And so VT Digger is a nonprofit, as I'm sure most people know. And so they rely on donations. They're right now in the middle of like a membership drive, kind of like VPR would do. But they also have funding from various foundations and things like that. And I do think, you know, the one constant that VT Digger's success really shows is that people are hungry for the information. There is really strong demand for good journalism. The stories that are our students, right, but also a lot of the other great journalism out there, there's a great appetite for those stories. And so the demand is there, and it's really a question of structuring our news production to actually be profitable. And I think, VT Digger, it's not been an easy road. I know that for them, but they have been successful, and it's just been about the quality of the product that they produce. And, I think, like I said, making it a destination site without a paywall is kind of the core vision for her that I'm amazed by what Anne accomplished, because first few years it was basically just her. And then gradually it's built from there. But so the future, that's a great question, because there's a giant generational shift happening with the baby boomers moving out of sort of the dominant role of being the consumers. And then you have all these young people who are, as you said, social media consumers. But I think organizations like VT Digger are pretty well positioned for that transition, because their work moves on social media on lots of different platforms. And I don't know. That's about all I have to offer. I think it's going to be a little bit unpredictable in the next. I don't think we would have guessed in 1995, what 2020 was going to look like in terms of the media environment. And I wouldn't want to hazard a guess about 50 right now.
me neither. Addie, we have about a minute and a half left before we have to run. I just thought I'd throw you one last question about your story. What was the biggest surprise that you had when you began researching it? You clearly were already interested in the subject before you got started, but it must have been something you found out that was like unexpected to you.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to think of the best, most juiciest thing. I think that one thing that really did surprise me was the similarity of perspectives that people had within the program about how necessary it was. Obviously, my perspective from the very beginning was that this program needs to be continued. It's, super vital. But every person that I interviewed there really shared that same message and, said that the governor needs to extend this program. This is really a life support. And I think that was something that I heard that was just wow. It opened my eyes to the fact that this is such a real issue, and that people who are experiencing this, feel the exact same way, and it put an extra sense of urgency on it for me.
Interesting. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for today, but I wanted to thank you both again very much for making the time for this conversation. Ben Heinz, the editor for student journalism at the Underground Workshop, a platform hosted by VT Digger, and Addie Lunstner, who's a senior at Arlington Memorial High School, wrote a story that was published as part of the Underground Workshop about homeless folks living in a motel down near Bennington. Well, and to thank you all of you for being with us today as well. I hope you found our program interesting, and we'll see you again the next time. Meanwhile, have a great day.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.